So, all right, Nathan, you got the guitar. You've got your song ready for us. We want to do a little quarantine music here. So what do you have for us?
All right. You may have heard this this rhythm, man. Wait. Hold on.
Welcome, everybody, to the Competition Archery Media Podcast, where we cover all things pertaining to competition archery. I'm your host, PJ Riley. Sitting in with me is cam manager Josh Grind. Josh, thanks for being here for another video audio podcast.
Thanks, PJ. We're here again today, and we're spread out a little further today.
Yes, we are.
Bringing our guest in. You know, I think we're bringing in Nathan Brooks. I think we will be well within the recommended 6 foot. Social
no
distancing.
Doubt. Yes, we are doing our social distancing. We wanted to mention that this video audio podcast is brought to you by our platinum sponsors. We got Trueball and Excel, Matthews, PSE, Hoyt, Black Eagle, and Elite Archery. And speaking of Elite Archery, our guest today, as you mentioned, Elite Pro Staffer Nathan Brooks. Nathan, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Welcome. Good to be here.
What is your world looking like these days in the coronavirus era?
Well, obviously, being a professional shooter, there's obviously events I'm not getting to go to, just like you guys. Outside of that, it's still, you know, get up, work on your archery game, work on the things you need to work on. Since we don't know when we're actually going to go back to shooting, or at least, you know, tentatively, we don't know some of the next events, whether they'll be canceled or whether they'll still have them or whatever. You can't just sleep on it. So you have to get after it and keep shooting and try to keep improving. I really think this is a great time to work on, you know, specific parts of your game that really need help. And that would be yardage judging for me.
Ah, yes. You dipped your toe back into that this year, but kind of came out of the gate swinging heavy. Finishing second place, your first one back.
Wait a second. I don't think that was said properly. I think Nathan dipped his toe in the known and jumped back into the deep end that he
Good
knows
point.
The unknown. Because you were no amateur in the unknown divisions prior to trying out known. So,
yeah, you know, obviously I may look like I'm 15, but really I've been around a long time. And so it started as a professional shooter in 99. So there was no such thing as known distance 3D archery back then. So, you know, all the years of shooting unknown 3D and really loving that, trying to master that game, especially like with ASA, because it's so much different than say IBO, where IBO, you're just aiming at the center of the 10 ring. At ASA, you've got that risk reward sort of thing that when you throw in the unknown distance factor, it really makes gaming a really, really important part of what you do in your management. So don't get me wrong, you have to manage even in the known because there's certain shots that's just better just to shoot a 10 on, but you don't want to shoot any 8s. So obviously, if you could hit every 12, you'd be in the best situation, but the reality is you don't have to. So you just have to figure those things out. But come back to the game that I, you know, I've cut my teeth on, that I grew up doing, that I've made a living doing, is a lot of fun because, you know, I've missed shooting with some of the guys that I grew up in the sport with, and just getting back to what feels natural.
Why did you go known? I don't think I know that answer.
Well, in all honesty, I really thought that when it went known, or when we got the addition of the known pro class, and how many people started going that direction. And I mean, the class was double the size of regular open pro. You look at all the amateur divisions and basically all the numbers are in known. So it makes me just think, okay, well, it's just a matter of time before this unknown stuff goes away. So I thought I might as well just get ahead of the curve here and jump in with those guys because It's coming, so Wi-Fi'd it. And really, and to be perfectly honest, I didn't care either way, known or unknown. I really didn't care. And do I care today? What I really care more about is that we're all together getting to shoot. And that was one of the things I was worried about as a professional shooter, being in the business as long as I'd been in it. I really didn't think that the manufacturers was really going to stand for having two men's professional divisions. So I just kind of guessed that it was eventually going to go away and the manufacturers would get tired of basically paying, you know, two sets of contingency monies. That's double, you know, the amount of contingency monies that they have to pay out in a sport that's already, you know, it's really tapped to a large degree. And but it hasn't went away and it's still there. So 3 years later, I'm sitting back looking at the success that I've had in the Gnome Pro, which is pretty good. I won in 2017 and made almost every shoot down in 2018. And last year was not as good a year for me. But I just, you know, every year I go to the IBO Worlds. And, well, usually I shoot one of the Triple Crown events and then go to the IBO Worlds. And I've been doing that since 2015. Prior to 2015, I was shooting every Triple Crown tournament also. But in 2015, I started going to, like, one Triple Crown event and then shooting the Worlds. And every year at the Worlds, I'm so looking forward to it because I've shot known distance all year long up to that point. And so, I don't know, it's just something that it's different. So it allows me to go back to just being relaxed and shoot my shot without any pressure of, I got to hit it sort of thing. As far as that, basically the difference in the known pro versus the unknown, in my opinion, is like shooting indoor archery versus shooting maybe field archery, where, yeah, they're both known distances, but you don't feel like you have to hit every single X when you're shooting field.
Right.
And that's the way it feels when you're shooting known distance 3Ds. You almost feel like you have to hit everything. Now, I know that's not true, but it leaves you with that same indoor type feeling of, I'm here not to miss, instead of I'm here to hit. You know, so it's kind of like a defensive strategy instead of an offensive strategy.
Right.
Which it's just a different feeling. And with unknown, like I said, that's where I cut my teeth, and it's my history with archery, really. So very comfortable in that setting. I've learned how to deal with that. And honestly, I don't get as nerved up. The very first tournament shooting known, and it took me six targets or so to get my heart rate back down where it was, you know, comfortable. I mean, I felt like I was shooting an indoor tournament. And obviously that changed after the first tournament. That kind of went away. But that's the first time I've ever been that jacked shooting 3D. So,
well, you came to Foley, first ASA of the year. Boom, jumped right back in, finished in second place. Did it just feel like everything was clicking again, or had you done a lot of pre-work on your judging game?
No, I hadn't done a lot of work on my judging game. I had done some work on my judging, but the funny thing is about judging. I mean, you know, like I said, I've put in years and years and years of effort and work into judging. And I'm not saying that it's easy for me, because you can look back at all the years that I've shot, and if judging was easy for me, you would have seen my name at the top a whole lot more than what you've seen it. And now, granted, a lot of that also has to come back with just poor shooting, because a lot of times my distance will be good and I just don't make the shot, or I mismanage how I'm playing the game. So there's those factors involved also, but I kind of feel like that as far as the shooting part goes, it was really good in Foley. I was working on some things to try and make my shooting as good as it could possibly be. And I think those things were finally starting to shine through. I made a commitment to going to a whole lot more holding weight on my bow than what I had been shooting. And it just felt so foreign that first week or so of shooting it that I wasn't sure I was going to be able to keep them in the 10 rings. But I worked on my yardage some, but really I was working a lot on my shot. And, you know, the first day, as we did the interview, you know, what really stood out to me was that, I managed the game exactly the way I needed to the first day. I shot it only out of 20 targets. I only shot it 5 12s, like dead straight on at 5, and I hit all 5 of them.
Ah.
And I mean, I put myself in a position to try and hit the other ones, but I wasn't all out shooting at them. And then I did shoot 3 8s. Those were just part of the yardage game sort of missing. And then I actually fell into 3 12s also. And I say fell into it. They were calculated misses. I guess that's the better way to say it.
Right.
You know, basically you have more yardage. You think it's a little bit further than what it is. And so, you know, you kind of line up over the 12 and you're like, all right, well, this is where I'm going to do. I'm going to play up towards the center 10. And it's on the chamois, for instance, where the 12 ring is almost more 6 o'clock than it is 4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So when you fall low, it's easy to hit that 12 if your yardage is off and you don't have enough distance on it. So you know, again, they're calculated misses, but I fell into 3 and then I shot 3 8s and I hit 5 12s that I was shooting at. So, you know, shot 10 up for the day and it was a good round. And second day, I played the game basically the same way. I just didn't have the lucky, you know, the lucky drops or the rises into the uppers that I was trying to shoot.
And how about the last shot of the night? I think it was close to max distance, 50 yards, 14.
Yeah, it was 50 yards, and I never miss 50-yard 14s, PJ, especially at unknown distance. I knew it was going in. There was no doubt in my mind.
I mean, you center punched it, so.
Well, I'm glad that they didn't ask me to shoot it again. I mean, you know, when you know how far it is, that's even hard to hit. So
heck yeah.
I like luck. You know, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you started drawing. Mike started talking to you. You had to let down. Then you drew back again. And like PJ said, that was a center punch. I mean, it was as pretty as it gets. That was one of my favorite moments of the weekend. I mean,
for sure.
Your hat comes off and the crowd went crazy. And Danny's standing there. He's smiling. And yeah, that was an awesome, awesome time in the
yeah,
weekend.
The only thing that would have made that better is if that would have put me in the lead and McCarthy would have had to 14 to match it.
Yeah.
You know, something better. But, you know, it is what it is. He shot so amazing that second day down there, which he shot good the first day, but he really showed out the second day. And, man, he's so strong. I mean, you know, people talk about his yardage judging ability, and it is what it is. And we know that's part of the game. But I'm going to tell you right now, in 2001, Jeff Hopkins and I were going back and forth with some things. And he told me, he said, I'm going to tell you – straightforward right now. He said, it ain't about yardage judging. The best shooter wins this sport. And I thought he was crazy at the time, you know, cause I'm thinking to myself, it's just because we're going back and forth, you know, that he would say something like that because it was over yardage judging is the issues that we were having. But, regardless in time, I've come to realize that, don't get me wrong. You do have to judge good, but I still believe that the shooter is, that's where it's all at. I mean, you have to shoot your bow perfectly. And when you do that, you can miss, you know, a few yards here and there. It doesn't have to be perfect if you're shooting your bow perfect. So,
right. Easier cushion that way.
Yeah, exactly. You understand that, I mean, you know, if I'm aiming at the top of the 12 and it's a 44-yard, 45-yard target, if I'm aiming at the top of the 12 and I have, you know, a yard less on it, I can still hit it pretty easily. If I judge it right on, I can still hit it. Sometimes if you miss it a yard and a half, you can still hit it if you're making perfect shots. And people will say, well, no, how's that possible? Well, when you go out there and you shoot it a dot every time, you hit dead center of that dot every time you shoot at it? Absolutely not. You shoot a little high, you shoot a little low in the dot, you know, you kind of shoot in the dot, but that's what you're playing. So, you know, you have to understand that the shooting element of it is so important. And when you watch, especially in the shoot-off, being able to watch McCarthy and how steady he was holding throughout that whole thing, which the pressure really wasn't on him. I mean, all he had to do was shoot 10s, but that just goes to show you how perfectly he's shooting his bow. And you don't come to the, you know, the Lancaster Classic and shoot the kind of scores that, you know, Levi shoots and McCarthy shoots and, you know, all the top level unknown yardage 3D shooters. You don't come and shoot those kind of scores if you're just a so-so shooter.
Right.
Those guys can flat pound, and they can judge yardage.
Both those guys shot 900s in Vegas.
Yeah.
So, yep.
You know, they know how to shoot the bow.
Yeah, and they handle the pressure. That's the thing. And being able to, you know, lay that arrow down there and put it down range when your heart rate is, you know, through your chest, which, like I told you, that's part of the things that I've made some changes on my stuff equipment-wise recently to try and alleviate some of the issues that I've had over the last several years shooting indoors. It just kind of seems like my indoor game is going down and down. And I look back and I look at all my notes and everything that I got, and I'm correlating it to something other than age, because I still feel like I execute well. I still feel like I hold good enough. I'm shooting the scores in practice, but why aren't they showing up in tournaments? And the biggest thing I find is that my holding weight has, you know, drastically changed over the years of, you know, my shooting. And so I went back to, you know, cranking up that high holding weight and going to see what that does. I've got a year to play with it before indoor season rolls back around. So we'll see how that goes. But I can definitely say, shooting 3D, that, you know, the heart rate is not there on the range like it is right. Maybe in the shoot off or even indoors. But in the shoot off, it felt really good. The heart rate was going good. And when I drew the bow back, it's like it went away, you know. So
did you change your holding weight by changing your draw weight, or did you change your let off? Play with your draw stops on those elite bows.
A little bit of both.
Okay.
I had to play with my draw length and shorten up just a little bit, because when my let off got lower,
all right,
the longer draw length was, I wasn't holding it back against the wall as good, so I had to shorten it up just a little bit. I'm like 29 3/4 inch draw length now instead of 30.
Gotcha.
And or at least that's where this bow seems to aim the best for me, and I stay with the shot a little bit better. And so that's basically what I've done, is just play with that and try and get that up there pretty high.
And your draw weight now is what? What are you pulling?
Well, you know, that's a funny thing. I will tell you right now that I'm still working on things. I still haven't finalized, like, this is my 3D setup.
Yeah.
Because as I'm practicing, I'm still seeing some things that I need to change. And even though I had a good weekend in Foley, that doesn't mean that, oh, yeah, I've got it now. I've got it figured out. No, I'm still working on it. So at the in Foley, I shot 70 and a half pounds. I'm actually playing with a setup right now that's 75 pounds.
Oh.
And it feels really good, and it seems like it's aiming really, really good for me. So I don't know if I'll wind up shooting more pounds or how that's going to go, but I like it right now. So
nice. Because for ASA, you just have the speed restriction, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, you know, there might be an 80-pound limit, I think, maybe at ASA.
Yeah.
But I don't figure I'm going to go over 80.
And have your shoulders in working condition to play the guitar anyway.
Right, yeah.
So we asked Nathan to give us a little quarantine music. We know that he is a creative songwriter. So, Nathan, what do you have for us?
Well, an old Bush song. Knocked off a Bush song, if you got any Bush fans out there.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Hopefully I can get this right. You know, I'm actually typically playing country music, so this would actually be my debut in the rock genre.
I'm sure it'll be a hit.
Perfect.
And sometimes I get pretty confused on it, so. Quarantine.
routine's an ugly scene. But what it means is that I can't buy beans. Think I'm losing my mind in all this free time. Nowhere to go, nowhere to dine. I went to the store, can't get through the door. I'm all out of bread, yeah, I needed some more. Mac and cheese and Charmin, please. Then I break and run because somebody sneezed. Watching days crawl by, quarantine, quarantine. My archery has slowed down, it seems. I stay on YouTube and watch Chris B. We play board games, and it's such a shame that I have to cheat because I'm so lame. Kids out of school I thought would be cool, but 2 weeks of them has proven me such a fool. Watching days crawl by, could have been more fun with you. We couldn't shoot though we wanted to. You could have had more fun with me. Archery Geeks and Kristen Berry. Quarantine. Quarantine. Watching days crawl by. Quarantine. Watching days.
That'll be the end of that. How about that?
That was great. Well, Nathan, thank you for doing that. I do want everybody to know that I gave you like 10 hours to come up with that. And so that was, I think, awesome.
Yeah,
for as short a time as you had.
I had a little help there with my wife and son on some lyrics there. So got to save it.
Well, that was great. And
writing
thanks,
credits.
Thanks for bringing in some laughter because it's not been on a big supply around here. So laughing helps. Nathan, thank you so much for your time and for the entertainment this afternoon.
You bet. One of these days, I think I'm going to just actually, my buddy has a recording studio, or used to. I don't know if he still does. I hadn't seen him in 4 or 5 years, but I think I'm going to just record all the songs that I've written. I've got like a, you know, a lot of them never been heard before. I did one to Blue Ain't Your Color from Keith Urban.
Yes.
It's titled Levi, Blue Ain't Your Color.
Wait, yes. We might have to hear that.
Yes, you do need to do that.
Done songs for Joby and, of course, the old Gillingham song. And then the Known Distance song that was out there. And then, I don't know, I've got probably 7 or 8 different archery-related songs that have, you know, people in them and that sort of stuff. And some of them have been controversial, so I didn't post them.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got an album to put together there.
Yes, for sure.
I'll probably sell, like, you know, maybe two albums.
Well, PJ and I are both buying them, so you got two down.
Two right there. So I guess we should ask you, Nathan, you being on the inside, one of the athletes, what are you hearing as far as what are you? Do you think you're going to shoot next? What is the next tournament that you think you're going to be at? Or do you have any idea?
The way the schedule looks for me, and you know, obviously there's a lot of shooters shooting in different organizations and things like that. But my schedule is pretty much, you know, at the beginning of the year, it's full of ASA tournaments. It's full of IBO tournaments, all the spot tournaments at the beginning, which obviously Louisville would have been my last indoor tournament on the schedule. I wasn't actually scheduled to shoot the Yankton event.
Okay.
But so with Louisville being canceled and then the Fort Benning ASA being canceled, Texas is next on the list. So I'm preparing like I'm going to go shoot Texas. Be honest with you, I don't feel like I probably will. I kind of feel like we'll probably miss out on that too. But regardless, I'm going to prepare like I'm going to Texas for the ASA.
Do you have any local shoots that you can go to? I've been seeing guys have been posting about going to little things here and there around where they lived. Do you have something like that that you can stay sharp
on?
I
shot one last weekend and – or no, I'm sorry, 2 weekends ago. And I tell you, talking about things I need to work on, funny coming off of Foley, you finish right there, you know, the top of the heap of the men's pro class and second target on that course. I completely missed the Wolverine. Completely missed it. It was 49 yards and 43 yards will not hit that. So it was a great set, super tight lane, big ditch, you know, that I couldn't see, you know, to the target. So basically you're judging target size. And that was basically about the fourth or fifth time I've seen that target. So I ain't quite got that one down yet. So need to work on that. But yeah, there's a few little events around. And, you know, I think it's okay as long as, you know, it's not a major event that, you know, and I got to say, too, I kind of feel like, you know, stuff out here in the country is a lot less critical than say being in the cities where there's so many different people on top of each other.
Right.
These, you know, a lot of these country folk that are quarantined, you know, like my dad told me, said, you know, that we're all quarantined and everything. He said, but ain't nothing changed. He said, it feels like another day for us. Just same old routine. You know, he's retired, so ain't going anywhere. Ain't doing anything. If he wants to go fishing, he goes fishing, you know, that sort of thing. But, but you know, not much different. So, and that's kind of the way it is, I think, for a lot of people. Obviously, we're not getting to work. So guys that are retired, I can understand where they're struggling with things. They never know if they're caught up, you know. What are they supposed to do today? Am I going to sit here today all day again? Or, you know, so. Well, my dad says the biggest challenge is just knowing if he's caught up. He doesn't know.
Right. Well, in your judging, I can vouch as well. I was shooting this past weekend that a judge of 80 yards does not hit the 93-yard elk either. So you miss that by a lot.
So, with that judging, PJ needs help because I heard the stories from this week. What does practice for the judging look like for you? And what do you, you know, I've heard everybody kind of has a different formula for how much they shoot, how much they practice judging. What do you do in your practice?
All right, I'm going to just be straightforward here. This is honest as it gets.
That's what we want.
Perfect.
I just go shoot. The one thing I'll say that I do is I try and always keep notes every day of when I go judge what target it is, how far I judged it for, and what it actually turned out to be. And so basically I just do that. So as I see trends of what I'm doing, you know, certain targets that I get really comfortable with, and that, you know, when I see those targets on the course and I know that I'm judging them good, well, that kind of gives me a better green light to go for those 12s. Because, like I said, this is all about game management as far as ASA goes, and knowing when to shoot at 12s and when to make sure that arrow stays in the 10 ring. And so you take calculated risk. And by keeping notes of how you're judging certain targets, that should give you a better indication of what you need to do when that target rolls around, you know, and you have it in front of you in a tournament setting. So now you know what you need to do. But other than that, judging distance is just depth. I don't want to underemphasize the fact that, you know, having targets is a benefit, all that sort of stuff. But I also don't want to emphasize or not enough. I also want to make sure that everyone understands you don't have to have targets to get good. I didn't have targets till I was in my 20s. And I would go shoot tournaments on the weekends. But during the week, I mean, I had a rangefinder in my hand a lot, or not even a rangefinder. A lot of times I'd just be out judging it, and then I would step the distance off. And when I say judging it, I just mean judging whatever, whether it be trees or rocks or a car tire or whatever. When Bobby Ketcher and I used to travel together, we'd stop. You know, we'd be eating somewhere, and we'd walk out of the restaurant, and, all right, how far is it to that truck tire right over there? We'd judge that truck tire. You know, I mean, it's just depth. It's just learning. And so –
are you one who counts out yardage on the ground? Are you just looking at your whatever your, you know, the target or the truck tire or whatever, a little of both? What's your process for judging?
I do it all. And whatever I feel the strongest, you know, the most most sure about, the strongest about, whatever method is working for that day, I use it. And I don't use the same method all the time. And that's my wife, she's trying to learn how to judge yardage. I mean, she's been shooting really good over the last several years, and she wants to try her hand at some of this yardage judging stuff, which is good. It's a good year for me to go back to yardage judging because she wants to judge too. So
yeah,
gives us something to do together. So, you know, she's working on things, and I have to remind myself a lot of times that she's just starting. So she's trying to figure out, you know, what is her go-to distance, you know, because I've heard that my whole life, that there's certain distances that people have that they just know how far that is. Levi used to talk about how he could just find 30 yards, you know, basically anywhere in the woods, he can just look and say, there's 30. That's his go-to distance.
Hmm.
And the further out that distance is, the better off, you know, you can judge yardage. Well, she's still learning what's 10. You know, let alone 20 or 30 yards.
Yeah.
So 20 is a really good distance for me to feel like I can just really nail it every time, because you shoot indoor spots all the time, and it's just a distance that's real comfortable to me. One thing I used for a long time was, and I don't use it as much because I'm not in that setting anymore, but when I was a kid growing up at home, I had a 40-yard bag that I shot all the time, Morel target bag. And I mean, I shot that thing. That was my everyday shooting. Go to 40 yards and shoot 40. I mean, just pound it. And I got to where I could just close my eyes and see that 40-yard bag right beside whatever target it was that I was getting ready to shoot at.
Hmm.
So like I can envision it right there beside it. Is it closer or is it further? You know, and I'd get that feel. Am I closer to 40? Am, you know, the short side of 40? Am I closer to, you know, to 35? You know, where's it at? And so I use it all, PJ. I mean, if there's a method out there, if it's actually counting yards on the ground, I've done that plenty. Usually that's my default. When everything else is jacked up in my head and I can't seem to figure it out, I go to one, flip that, that's two, flip that, that's four. Okay, so now I got at least a little understanding of depth again, and then inch my way out basically until I come up with something that I'm confident in that will be good enough to, you know, make the shot. But I use it all, because I don't think you can put yourself in a box to where this is the only thing you do, because you ever have those days where you wake up and you feel so good? I mean, just, man, you woke up easy, it was no problem, and then the next day you wake up and it feels like you got run over by a truck.
Every day.
All right. So, you know, if you have those kinds of days, that's yardage judging. At least that's my experience with yardage judging, is some days I just, man, I got it. And I hope the tournament ends on that day.
Right.
Because I love that day. That's like, I mean, in 2016 when I won the Classic, that day I shot 22 up on the range.
Wow.
And then I went to the shoot off, I don't know, 32 or 34 up or whatever it was. McCarthy and I were tied going into the shoot off. And man, I felt so confident because I'd shot so good that day because my yardage was so strong. And, you know, in that shoot off, I didn't miss a ring until the last target, which all I had to hit was a 10. So that's all I was shooting at. And so, I love those days, but I've also had the other days where I can't tell how far it is. So.
I have a lot of those days too. Well, at Foley, we were, and you're talking about your wife, Jennifer, wanting to get into the unknown. We were out on the range with, I think it was Women's Open B class, A or B, I forget what it was, and there was only three women in it. And they were saying, I think it might have been Open B, mm-hmm. And they
probably
said
was.
Next, you know, we have to go to Open A. There was only a handful, and then basically the pros. And the ladies were telling us everybody's going into the known class.
Yeah.
How do you convince someone coming into this that unknown is the way to go?
Well, you know, PJ, that's a sensitive subject with a lot of people. You know, if you're just asking me straightforward, what do I think is best for 3D archery? Do I think known distance or unknown is best for 3D archery? I actually think there's a place for both.
Sure, why not?
However, that being said, for tournament archery, I think known distance is best. And I say that, you know, very, very candidly, because I know that obviously I've made a living shooting unknown. If it goes away, I'll just step over and shoot known. Done that and know how to do that as well. And this is one of those things, you brought it up amongst the women. Okay, so if you look at the women's ranks of shooters, if you look, all you can see that there's so many shooters in known and there's almost none in unknown.
Right.
This is a hobby, right? For most people, it's a hobby.
Yeah. So
that being said, they want to do well. They want to go hit what they shoot at. And most women, and I say that, like I said, I know there's plenty, there's several out there that want to learn how to judge yardage. But most women, they want to just shoot their bow.
Right.
And so they like 3D, they like being outside, but they also use a rangefinder. So it's so much better for them because they can hit what they're wanting to shoot at, and they just feel more comfortable with that.
It does get frustrating if you're out there and you're missing, and you're only missing because you didn't know how far it was.
Exactly. And, I mean, I have known several women in the past that didn't want to go shoot 3D because they didn't want to go lose all their arrows, and mm-hmm. they shot indoor archery.
Yeah.
And that was it. That's all they shot because they couldn't judge yardage. And I'm not saying, that if it goes all known that the women's divisions will just blow up because all these ladies will start coming out and shooting. Well, no, there's already known out there right now. So if they want to come shoot, they'll come shoot.
Right.
My point was, years ago, I knew several ladies that didn't shoot because they didn't have known distance at that time for 3D. And, you know, I know that, you know, you look at the pro ladies, Cara Kelly and Sharon Wallace and Haley Johnston, Emily McCarthy, you know, you look at that group of shooters and they're so talented. They're so good, but, you know, shooting a bow, let alone judging. I mean, they're extremely talented shooters. And it would be interesting to me to see how they would all fare shooting known distance. But, you know, I'm not going to sit here and try and do anything for their class. And, you know, I've talked with several of them numerous times, and, you know, I'm not in that class, so should I even have a voice? You know, I don't compete with them, so I don't want to step on their toes. That's their living. That's what they do. So, you know, I totally understand that.
Yeah, it got real warm in here real fast. Wait a minute. You know, and I think
that's the way it feels at times, though. Right. Because I've had that discussion with them, with some of those ladies before, and it gets very heated quick.
Oh, yeah.
And I understand. I mean, like I said, that's how many of them make their living. So I get that. I mean, it's how I make my living, too. I've done both sides.
There's
really not very many people that can say that they've shot both.
Right.
Yes.
You know, both sides.
At the top level, yeah.
Yeah, and had success at both.
Right.
And so I don't, like I said, I don't shoot their class, so I don't have any skin in that game. But just analytically looking at it, it looks to me like it would be better for them if it was known, because they have more people that's aspiring to be top level shooters, and then they would have more people in their class that they could draw from. Because if you look back at the numbers in the women's pro class dating all the way back to 2000, they've had about 20 in the class, and it might range as high as 30 from time to time, but it's, you know, stays 20 to 30, and that's where they've been. And you know, I'm not saying those are bad numbers. I'm not saying they're good numbers. I'm just saying that's where the numbers are at.
Right.
There are ones, I know Paige Pierce has said, if the ASA had a known division, she'd be at every one.
Yep.
You know, she just doesn't want to judge yardage, so she'll play her other
thing
games.
The thing is, they actually can shoot the known 45.
Right.
Even as and I know that Matthews pays contingency money there because
Tanya Jensen shoots that.
Yes. Yeah. She shoots them, and she's done extremely well. And I mean, that's obviously a very valid class. I mean, that's where my wife was shooting. She was in the known 45, and you know, she's done, she's done well there. And, but you know, at the same time, you know, she is a hobbyist archery, you know, I mean, that's what she does, for that. And, you know, having to compete against pros because there's no pro division for them really, really doesn't bode well for her all the time. Like I said, I mean, she's won in that class. So, I mean, I know that she's very capable. But, you know, she was just feeling like this year she wanted to try something different. So she started judging yardage, you know, just to try it. So,
well, let's bring it back to, because like PJ, I think was asked, like, what would you say to your wife to encourage her in that, or what piqued her interest? Because, listen, I know I joked that it got warm in here, and I know a lot of ladies have our cell phone numbers and will be, what are you doing? and really, like, I have a daughter, you know, who aspires to shoot in that women's pro class. So what would you say to, you know, what was it that piqued your wife's interest in joining the unknown and learning that? What would you say to women that maybe want to give it a try? Because you have shot both, you have feelings strong enough towards the unknown to jump back in. So what would you encourage women to do that want to learn to judge or want to shoot in that? You know, what are the conversations you're having with your wife?
Well, you know, it's kind of one of those things where number one, they got to be willing to spend a lot of time doing it. I mean, and you say, what would you say to encourage them? That doesn't sound very encouraging, right? I mean, you're going to have to spend a lot of time judging yardage, not shooting your bow.
Right.
But the difference is it's just different archery. And so if you're interested in learning more about your equipment, and what I mean by equipment, I say how speed affects things, how each yard makes a difference. You know, there's little things that that unknown distance I think can teach you, and you pay a lot more attention to than you do when it's known. And that may sound weird or whatever, but when you're shooting unknown distance, you kind of see that there's things that's working your direction. You know, for instance, you're judging and maybe everything is a little hot that day. You know, you're judging a little too strong, and you can kind of figure out how to play that to your advantage. It's just different, you know, whereas when one day you're shooting your bow bad and it's known distance, and your arrows are all over the place, and there's really nothing you can do about it because you're just shooting bad.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So two wrongs can actually make a right sometimes in unknown yardage.
That's
the blunt truth. It actually can. So.
Well, I just know I go out, you know, we shoot at our local shoots. I'm not a pro by any stretch of the means, and so we can shoot however we want. I just like shooting unknown. I like that aspect of the game, trying to figure out how far that is. And I miss, and, you know, I shoot fives and highs and lows and all that. And like you said, you know, there are some days where I can say, oh, man, I'm judging everything 3 yards too far. And, you know, then you play that game, okay, I'm going to take three out. I don't know. I just like the cat and mouse game of unknown. For me, that just makes it interesting. I know Tim Gillingham always says, this makes it a yardage judging contest rather than an archery contest. But, you know.
There's truth in that. I mean, I don't disagree with him in that aspect because, I mean, if you can't judge yardage, you're not going to hit it. But at the same time, you know, I also hear people say, well, you know, when you go bow hunting, and I've said it numerous times, when you go bow hunting, you always have your rangefinder with you, right? I said, well, yeah, I do. But sometimes I don't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get caught. I've been caught.
Sometimes you have to figure out how far something
yes.
is. And I know this is not bow hunting, and, you know, it's an archery competition, not bow hunting. So, you know, I don't want to try and make it like it's, you know, because of bow hunting.
Right.
I mean, if I was bow hunting with my target bow, I mean, it's got the 30-inch stabilizer bar and all, you know, so you see what I'm saying. I don't want to make it about bow hunting.
Right.
But there is times where you do need to, if you're a bow hunter, you need to know how far something is.
Yeah.
And to Tim's point, there's a lot of people that don't want to bow hunt. They just want to target shoot. And so what's the point? What's the point in judging distance and having to do that instead of just shooting your bow? So I understand his point. I really do. It does become a yardage judging competition to a degree. But I'll guarantee you this. A guy that can judge so-so and is a fantastic shot can beat the socks off a guy that can judge great and can't hit the broadside of a barn.
Absolutely.
No doubt.
So it's still an archery competition.
Yeah.
You still have to shoot your bow.
Well, I always like discussing that. We're obviously not going to resolve that issue here, but it always makes for a good discussion.
And gave us something to talk about besides coronavirus. For
yeah, exactly.
There's that word again.
Yeah, you know, back to reality, I guess. So.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about your involvement in the set technology. Because now here's Nathan Brooks, you know, he's a pro archer. And, you know, a lot of us who know that you like to tinker and mess around with things. But, I mean, you are an integral part of that new design for Elite. And I know you're proud of it and they're proud of it and people really like it. Tell us a little bit about how you managed to get that on this series of bows this year.
Well, I'll say the biggest reason that it's on the bow is because there's people at Elite and that will listen all the way through. And what I mean by that is, I mean, it's one thing to listen to the ideas. It's another thing to see it through. And so Josh Sidebottom is great to work with. And, you know, I work with those guys on a weekly basis on new product designs, you know, future designs, things that we're wanting to put out for tomorrow, things that we're trying to fix today, even though it's already brought out, you know, that sort of stuff, constantly working on, creating something better. And, through tuning my wife's bow or trying to get my wife's bow to tune, having some issues with that, that technology basically was born. And then when I saw the results that I was getting from her bow and how easily it was working, I started doing it on my own bow and then, just started playing with some stuff and obviously called Josh. About any time I ever have an idea, I usually call Josh and ask him about it. And he says, well, you know, get me some more information, do some more testing, what you come up with. So I, you know, cut rockers from 5 thousandths off all the way down to about 20 five thousandths off and just playing with stuff, seeing what I could do, and got a lot of different results and shared it with him and said, hey, what do you think about this? He says, I like it. And then, you know, we sat down together and designed it. And of course, you know, I'm not a design engineer. I'm not an engineer at all, but being able to have an idea like that and know how to bring it to market in the best way possible on an actual bow and understanding the equipment, knowing what people want, I think is a really key element in developing any new product. So, I mean, there's multiple ways we could probably have done what we did, but I think we hit it absolutely most simple way that you possibly could. And then made it even more easy by putting diagrams on the bow later to tell people which direction to turn this and do that, you know, to fix the problems. But it is neat to be able to say that I had a part in that and know that, you know, there's a lot of archers that's going to benefit from an idea that was born me working on my wife's bow. So that's humbling, I guess, you know.
That's awesome, yeah. Kinda, I know you've had your hand in other products with other companies you've worked with, and it just seemed like this one, I know just in talking to you about it, it seemed like this one you were pretty proud of, as, you know, you should be.
Yeah, it's definitely the most effective of anything, of all the ideas that I've had over the years with, you know, how to change this or how to do that, or, you know, to work with conjunction, you know, work in conjunction with a bow or whatever. This is by far the most effective, most easily used and most easily understood, because, you know, there's been technology and stuff that we've come out with in the past that was, it would take a fairly high level archer to understand exactly what they were to do with it. This is so simple that really any bow hunter that shoots, if you can read a paper tear, or if you can just watch the results of how you're shooting and shoot good enough to get consistent results in the way you're shooting, you should be able to tune using this set technology. So,
and without a press.
Yeah.
Most of the tuning you can do without a bow press.
Right. And that was a big theme in basically all of our new 2020 line was, let's try and make things as user-friendly as possible to stretch across, you know, the plane for everybody, for the dealers, for the, you know, for the consumers. Let's, you know, people are learning different than they used to. People are doing more on their own as far as shooters goes. There's better shooters in the world now because of the internet, because information is out there. And I know that's kind of strange to us now, you know, 25, 30 years into having the World Wide Web, because, you know, people that are 25 and 30 years old, they don't know what it's like without it. And, you know, I know what it's like without it. I grew up reading articles about how Randy Ulmer shot his bow and, you know, getting my hands on every bow hunting world publication that came out that had anything to do with target archery, and reading books by, you know, archers back in the 60s and 70s, you know, because archery is still really the same. The same ideas and principles apply, you know, so that's how I grew up learning how to shoot. And then beyond that, it was basically my dad allowing me to tear my bows apart and work on them and really not get too upset when I tore stuff up, you know, because I don't know if he knew it or not. I don't know if he knew how much I was learning then at that time, but, you know, I look back and think, wow, he had a lot of patience with me because I did tear up a lot of stuff.
That's great. So, Nathan, people have a lot more time on their hands now and following along. So where can people stay connected with you? Through social media, et cetera?
Primarily on Facebook. I have, you know, my personal page there on Facebook, and then I have a athlete page there on Facebook as well. You know, if they want to contact me there, message me there, I'm usually pretty quick about getting back to people. Occasionally, I don't. I use Instagram a little bit. I'm trying to use it more and more. But all that's pretty much linked up together. So they get with me on any of those platforms, I can probably get back to them.
All right, folks, that's another episode of the Competition Archery Media videocast/podcast. And thanks so much to Nathan Brooks for taking some time to join us today. Thanks, Nathan.
You bet. Pleasure to be with you guys.
All right, folks, you can find the Competition Archery Media podcast wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Go back, check out past episodes. We appreciate your time today. Thanks for joining us.